This morning, as we start our lesson together, I'd like to talk to you about the difference in pessimism and optimism. Now, this is not just a social thing. It's not something feel good. It has an application in the spiritual realm. Because when we think about pessimism, it always sees the difficulty in every opportunity. Then we look at the optimist, and it sees the opportunity in every difficulty. And we need to be the kind of people that are optimistic, because God is on our side. We recognize difficulties of life, but we have to make a choice in the matter, which one we're going to be, which attitude that we express in our lives. There are two ways of looking, of course, and the most ordinary application of this is when you have a glass of water, and some pessimistically say it's half empty, and the optimist said it's half full. And though that's a simple thing, it really shows a great deal of character study in that, as we consider the spiritual aspects of those things, because there are people that look at life and they are down on everything, and they think everybody's got something against them, and they resent everybody. And there are others that just love people and want to do good, and especially with the church. We want to look at our future and to recognize that we continue to preach the gospel of Christ. It's not always easy. We don't have an influx of great numbers because of the condition of the world today. But the gospel has this power, Romans 1:16, to save. So we're going to continue to preach the gospel because we believe there are souls out there that need the gospel of Christ, and we're going to do our part. When you begin to look at books, and there are many, we look at the definitions of this. Pessimism is a disposition, be sure that's on, a disposition to take the least hopeful view of things. Now, we can do that in the church, and we can do that in life. Another definition is pessimism, the feeling that things will turn out badly. Have you ever been there? You just know something's going to happen. Now, it's going to happen tomorrow, maybe, but you're just so afraid of tomorrow. And that's pessimism. General disposition to look on the dark side and to expect the worst of all things. I remember someone saying one time, well, things look bad, and they told me to cheer up, and I cheered up, and it got worse. I've heard that a lot of times, but we don't necessarily want to look at it that way. And so we look at this. What pessimism does, it kills joy. Now, the Philippian letter, chapter 4, verse 4, was written by the Apostle Paul while he was in prison in Rome. And he said, rejoice. And always, I say again, rejoice. Now, if the Apostle Paul could be in prison, possibly facing death, we could be joyful too. Yeah, we're going to die too. But, you know, we go to our reward when that's happened. And so even in prison, Paul had that sense of joy. Now, again, joy is not to be confused with fun. You go to Six Flags to have fun. You go skating to have fun. You do different things to do fun, but you go to worship God because you have joy in your heart. And it produces fear and anxiety. As you look at some of the scriptures, we're not going to look at all of them. But if you look, first of all, at Matthew chapter 6, some of the teaching of Jesus helps us understand the attitude that we ought to have. In chapter 6, let me get to that, beginning with verse 25. Jesus said, look at the birds of the air, for they neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns. Yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? Which of you by worrying can add one cubit to his stature? So why do you worry about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. And yet I say to you that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Now if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will it not much more clothe you, O ye of little faith? So little faith is connected to pessimism. Yesterday I was out on the back patio, and we have hummingbird feeders up. And I've always just thought hummingbirds are such a wonderful expression of God's grace and creation. And one flew up right toward my face and just hung there for a while and went over and began to feed. And I was just full of glory for God to think about how he made a hummingbird. You know, you look at these things. Today we see flowers, and flowers are blooming. And the way that he shaped a rose was God's grace and his beauty, his love of beauty. and the way the flowers grow. How many people have seen pictures this year of the bluebonnets in Texas? And you just think how beautiful that is. Well, that came from God. See, that had to be in his mind before it became a creation of God. And you look at all things, and why can we not have joy in all of those things? And so you look at this, and it weakens our faith. Again, let's turn to the book of Matthew, this time chapter 8, beginning of verse 25. And they were in a boat on the Sea of Galilee, and there was a storm. Verse 24 said, a great tempest. Verse 25, then his disciples came to him and woke him, saying, Lord, save us, we are perishing. But he said to them, why are you fearful, O you of little faith? Then he rose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. So the idea is that Jesus connects fear with pessimism, little faith. So faith and pessimism are not companions. If you have faith, you have optimism. If you have little faith, you have pessimism. And we have to recognize, and you know, looking at this incident, they should have known Jesus was in the boat. And if Jesus was in the boat, it wasn't going to sink. They didn't think about that. They just thought about their own safety. And they had that little faith that Jesus was talking about. And pessimism always comes from a lack of faith. And I need to know that. I need to look to the future with faith and optimism about these things, and even joy. Pessimism is born of doubt. Optimism is born of faith, and that's your difference right there. When we have faith, we understand that better. Pessimism produces more doubts and results in disobedience. When I don't have the faith that I should, I don't have the shield of faith. And Ephesians chapter 6 talks about the shield. And if I don't have my faith, I don't have that shield, I'm vulnerable to sinful things if I don't have that kind of faith. So we look at these things, and it yields constant discouragement. Let's turn to the book of Hebrews. And as we've been studying in class, there's some things that we learned there about the great cloud of witnesses and how we're to hold on to that great cloud of witnesses and not give up in our journey. So Hebrews chapter 12, beginning of verse 2, he said, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, has sat down on the right hand of God. That's a fact. Now, if I believe that, and I know that Jesus is alive and he's sitting at the right hand of God, then we can be like the Philippians. I can do all things through Jesus Christ that supports me. In verse 5, he said, don't forget the exhortation to chastening, and we talked about that this morning. And so that discouragement, that lack of faith yields, is something that can discourage me. Now, we talk about the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. Those are the three things the devil uses to get into your life. But there's one more as a result of those three things, and that's discouragement. When you get down to being so discouraged about things, do you go to worship? Do you pray? Do you think how bad things are without any kind of getting better? And that's what this is saying to us. We feel helpless. Now, the example given in Numbers 13 is when the 12 spies were sent into Canaan to spy out the land. And the 10 of the spies came back with this thing, oh, they're so big, they're like grasshoppers, and they've got walled cities, and the giants live among them, and we can't win. They weren't able to because of a lack of faith. Now, the consequences of that, you'll understand, were pretty severe, because they went in the wilderness wandering for 40 years. And all those people above the age of the warriors, all of them died in the wilderness. It'd be interesting to know how many carcasses, how many bones are laying out there somewhere not yet found because of the lack of faith. Now, if I read my Bible, and if I understand the lesson, it's to say like Joshua, we can do it. And of course, that's what finally came in about that. But they were saying, we're not able to do that. And so it stops progress. We can't do anything. Now, I told you about my frustration before. have that. I can't really set up Bible studies now like I used to. In North Carolina, I had Bible studies every night. And we baptized dozens of people. And the world has changed. People just don't want to hear that anymore. And so frustration can say, well, just give up. But I looked and I looked. There had to be some way to reach out to the people. That's where our website came in. I knew that people look on the internet at things. Now, it was announced this morning, in the 2 years and 2 months that we've had the website on, over 45,000 people have looked at that. I don't know all their circumstances. I don't know what they believe. But they're looking, and we're doing something. And when you brethren pass out those cards, you're doing evangelism. I want you to understand that's your job that you can do, that I do all the time. I keep them in my pocket. And when I cash out, I leave a card in the invoice or whatever. I want people to know because I can practice evangelism even when people don't want to hear it. And so we do that, and I urge you to be sure. I won't ask you this morning how many have cards with you. But I'll tell you like Sam did. They're on the back in the little box. They're on the front in the little box. Don't leave without some. Then give them away. Just give them away. And where you're doing evangelism. But what it does, it prevents one from achieving. And that again is Numbers 13 and Numbers 14, where they return back into the wilderness. Here they've been in Egypt for 400 years. Moses is called. Aaron is with him. They have all the plagues that destroy the idols in Egypt, and they're coming into the promised land. And pessimism keeps them out. I wonder if that applies to people today with regard to being baptized. I just wonder if you're thinking about your life. I've had people tell me, in fact, I've had this study with people who thought that they were too wicked, that God wouldn't forgive them. And I say that's never going to happen, because God is going to forgive anybody who's penitent, who's ready to confess Jesus Christ as the Son of God, and who's willing to be baptized. And so if you're pessimistic about life, and I know, and I talked to someone about this yesterday on the phone. Yes, there are hypocrites in the church. I know that. I've met them. I've had to deal with them. I understand that. But they're not going to get in my way between me and the Lord. Someone said, if you have to hide behind a hypocrite, you're worse off than he is. And I believe that. Or she is, as the case may be. So I'm not going to let anybody come between me and the Lord. And if you have that idea, you're an optimist. But if you look and say, well, you know, they said something snide about me. And somebody didn't really act friendly. And that's not a friendly church. So I'm just going to quit. You don't have faith. And that's the truth about the matter. So we need to have that kind of faith. The optimism factor has been put into many books. How to transform any lousy, rotten, stinking, getting nowhere job. You see, that's social things. And maybe you've got a job like that. Well, I can't help you with that. How to dehypnotize yourself from self-limiting negative habits that sabotage you from achieving personal and professional success. And there are books about that. I don't know how many books have been written about how to be successful, win victories, and all that sort of stuff. Well, the Bible does that too. See, it does that. I can look back and I can see so many examples, particularly studying Hebrews 11, and so many, many more. One of my favorites of all time is Esther. One of the, I think the Granbury Church of Christ is going to have a weekly summer series. And I've been assigned to study Esther. And I'm glad to study Esther. She was such a great woman and did so much for the cause of God and her people when they were in captivity. And so you look back and all those examples are there. Now Hebrews 12 says they're a great cloud of witnesses. And the idea that is painted in that, the portrait that is painted, is a race and a finish line. And Abraham and Sarah and all these others have crossed the finish line. They had a lot of problems. But because of their faith, they finished it. Now that they're standing at the finish line, over the finish line, they're waiting for us. I'm in the race now. And that's my life that has to keep going. Is it going to be a life of optimism or a life of pessimism? And I want to tell you right now, I have my moments. I have my moments like everybody else when you're discouraged about something and down at the mouth and all of those things. It frustrates me to have a runny nose. But tomorrow is another day. I worry so much about people that commit suicide. It has to be a lack of faith and pessimism because of things that have happened to them. But they'll never see another day. And the next day may have been the day when all their problems are finished, but they'll never find it out. And so you have to have a sense of optimism to get through life. Not just spiritual life, but everyday life. You understand that those things are there. Now the benefits of optimism is strengthens our faith. It strengthens our faith. It makes us able to do more. It causes us to go further. Optimism is a result of faith. Romans chapter 4 shows that very clearly as it's talking about overcoming like Abraham overcame. And it's a result of faith. And it talks about Abraham and Sarah, how he was 100 years old. But because of his faith, God blessed him with a child in his old age. I think Sarah was about 90, something like that. And you think about those two people having a child. Who's the oldest in the room this morning? How would you like to have another baby in your old age? Well, I know somebody that does. Jeannie Eccles. And she's doing well with that. So we look at that and recognize it. If it produces more faith and results in obedience. And so James chapter 2 has a great deal of facts to say about faith. You show me your faith apart from your works, and I by my works will show you my faith. And faith is visible. You're showing faith this morning. You're not in bed asleep. You're here. And you're here because of your faith. And your faith can grow because of that. Again, it yields encouragement. Romans chapter 8 starts off with three different kinds of law. Talks about the law of sin and death, which was the law of Moses. Then talks about eventually the law of the Spirit of life in Christ Jesus. And that's what yields encouragement. God knows what's going on in your life. And when you have the faith that's just going to move mountains, and I know that today it doesn't happen miraculously, but I have seen faith that took the problems of life. I'll never forget a lady in North Carolina. Her mother was an invalid. Her husband went to a mental hospital. And her father was an invalid. She was taking care of her mother and her father every day. And she was still a faithful Christian. She didn't complain about things. She just took care of her family. Finally, her husband came out of the mental institution, was able to help a little bit. But I'll always remember that woman as a woman of faith because she just did what had to be done. Now, when you get your circumstances in your life that are skewed and they're not going like you want to, work it out for the better. Don't give up. That's what this is telling us. The optimist feels unstoppable. And you can look at that again in Numbers 13 where Joshua and Caleb said, we can do it. We can do that. So I think about the future of Northside. What's it going to be? We're going to die on the vine? Not a God with us. We're going to keep working. We're going to reach out to lost souls around us because it's so important to do that. And when you look at things of that nature, it's something to really understand. And it quickens your joy. I get a thrill thinking about heaven. I hope you feel that same thing. The idea of seeing angels. Luke 16 tells us that when someone who's faithful passes away, God sends His angels. And the number of passages, both in the Old and the New Testament, show that angels do service on behalf of those that will inherit eternal life. What are you going to think when you see your first angel? What are you going to think when you see the face of God? You see, those things are real. Now, you know, the human mind can only grasp so much. And I know we're talking about eternal things. But in my mind, it's like the Ecclesiastes writer said, God put in us a sense of eternity. And I can believe in that. And certainly it brings me joy to think about those things. It produces comfort and contentment. In Acts chapter 5 and verse 41, if you'll turn there with me, it's a very simple little passage. But it talks about how people were encouraged. In verse 41 of Acts chapter 5, so they departed from the presence of the council, rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for his name. The apostles had been put in prison, and they didn't care. They were told, never preach in this name again. And they said, we're going to obey God rather than man. Now that's faith. And most of them were put to death in a cruel way because the world, through Satan, hated the truth. But they had this zeal. And we've talked a lot in class about faith, stuck in Hebrews 11 and 12. And I recognize that the people in the Hebrews 11 and 12 were people that faced terrible circumstances, and their faith saw them through. Now, I firmly believe that the kind of faith that I have to have is the same kind of faith they had. We may never have such dramatic tests of our faith. I doubt seriously if I'm going to be cut in two with a saw. I don't think I'm going to be put in an arena, let the lions chew me up. But the same kind of faith that they had is the same kind of faith I must have to get through this life. This is our life. And the manner and the type of faith is the same kind of faith that they had and we must have as well. And so it enables progress. Again, I've already quoted Philippians 4:13, the idea that we are to rejoice. And again, Paul said, I say rejoice, written from a prison cell. And we can grow. 2 Peter chapter 1 has the various graces that we're told. We add to our faith virtue and all of those kinds of things. We can grow. We can be a strong Christian. We may begin as a weak Christian, not knowing a lot, but as we read the Bible and let it dwell richly in us, then we grow in that. We can overcome things. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 tells us that there's no temptation that's overtaken you, but what you can't overcome it, because God will provide a way of escape. So, Flip Wilson used to say, well, God made me do it. The devil made me do it. And he made $1 million saying, the devil made me do it. But the devil can't make you do it. You have to choose. And the point is, if I have faith, I can resist the devil, James tell me, and he'll flee from me. How many times have you made the devil run away? Can you see that happening? Because you see something flashed in front of you that's appealing. Like Terry said in his class, if sin was terrible looking and terrible tasting, people wouldn't want to sin. But it's a pleasure involved. And so people are drawn to that. But you can make the devil flee when you resist him. And that's something we can do. So we can do God's work. I want to go back to the book of Psalms. I'd really love the reading of the Psalms, chapter 31 this morning, because it has so much to offer for us. Look in chapter 27, beginning of verse 1, how this applies to us like it did to David. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When the wicked came against me to eat up my flesh, my enemies, my foes, they stumbled and fell. Though an army may encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war may rise against me, in this I will be confident. And I tell you, that's a faith that just overcomes whatever in your life can happen to you. Yes, death, tribulations and pain and anguish about those things. But we have to be realist along with our optimism. And the idea is that we do have an adversity. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 12. We have to have the faith of Hebrews 13, verse 5. And there are consequences to our life about that. But what I want to look at this morning, as we close our lesson, is the idea that we have to be a realist, and the idea that truth can set us free. When I have the belief in the Bible, and folks, I've been set free from sin. Just like you, I've done things I shouldn't have done. But through the gospel of Christ and the truth, I can be sure about that. And what is real is John 17:17, which says, if you really want to know the truth, you'll know the truth. If you really have a desire to know the truth, you'll have the truth. And we'll know that. So how do I relate to that which is real? The idea is by faith. And again, Ephesians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Isaiah 41:10, fear not, I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Yes, I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. And when I hear those things, I know He's talking to me and to you as well.